you know, there's such a stigma, I think, for men to think that they're weak if they seek out help. And I mean, it could be the farthest thing from the truth, because it takes so much courage to talk about, you know, the things that have happened to you that are, you know, not your fault. And to be able to talk with a person and open up takes a lot of vulnerability.
Yeah.
And it's not always comfortable.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to the Hey Presley podcast. Today, I'm chatting with Dr. Morgan Francis. She's a nationally recognized treatment therapist, a counselor, and the founder of Scottsdale Premier Counseling. She specializes in the treatment of body image and eating disorders, self-empowerment, sexual compulsive behavior, mood disorders, relationships, trauma, and has over 20 years working in the mental health space. In this conversation, we really focus on breaking down the stigma around mental health, and we get super practical. We talk about who therapy is for, how to find a counselor, what to do if you're nervous to try counseling, how to do some self-work if you can't afford counseling, what self-concept is and why that is so important, how to help a friend that might be struggling with mental health issues, and so much more. I also asked for your questions from Instagram, so we cover those here. And there are just so many good nuggets in this conversation that I believe you'll really benefit from hearing. We really squeezed a good amount into this hour. In my experience, being a full-time nutrition coach and working on a deep level with so many individuals, and then having my own traumas that I've worked through in therapy, I just cannot say enough about how important this episode is, and I'm really honored to help normalize this conversation. I also don't want to forget to mention that we touch on a few resources in this episode, along with a special discount code for listeners on Dr. Francis's new online course. So make sure you check the show notes for that info. And lastly, while we don't really focus on suicide specifically in this interview, we are talking about mental health. And I would not feel right starting this episode without saying, if you or somebody you know needs help, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. Thank you, and please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Morgan Francis. Dr. Morgan Francis, thank you for being here. I'm so excited to have you. I want to start with how you came into therapy and counseling. How did you get started with your career, and what led you to that?
Well, first, thank you so much for having me on here. I mean, this is just an honor to be in your beautiful home, and I love it. And it's just, I love being able to talk about mental health. My personal journey started because I myself had to go into therapy after my brother died when I was 16. Mm-hmm. And so being able to have a safe place to talk about my grief and loss and my pain, and just going through all those emotional experiences of losing a sibling, yeah, and seeing my parents' marriage shift, and all of us just try to really adapt, and which you never really do, because right, grief, in my experience, is the one emotion that never goes away. Like, once you have grief in your life and you lose somebody close to you, it's always there.
Yeah.
And so you learn, in a sense, over time to figure out how to process it all. And so that's really what happened for me. So my parents put me into therapy, and it wasn't traditional talk therapy. We did art, we did journaling, we did stuff out in nature, music therapy. It was really special, and I really feel that that was very healing for me, because yeah, I really got in touch more with losing my brother and the pain associated with that. And then I kind of just stumbled into it when I was in college at University of Florida. I had a minor in psychology, and then I moved that into my major. And I just really enjoyed being able to utilize my experience to serve others.
Yeah.
To help them with their pain. One of the things that I recognize is that we are very good avoiders of pain. And we think that our feelings are going to, in a sense, kill us, because it can feel so overwhelming.
Sure.
But emotions don't end our life. It's the things that we do to avoid our feelings that end our life. So whether we go into a really poor relationship with our food, or yeah, drugs and alcohol, or sexual compulsivity, or gambling, or other areas that we can struggle to avoid our pain, that's how it can show up. And so I moved through the process of my education and I got my master's at John Carroll University in Ohio. And then I moved out to Arizona and I got my doctorate in clinical psychology. And I worked for a private practice here in Scottsdale, Arizona for about 10 years.
Wow.
And it was a wonderful experience. It was a group practice. So there was 20 other therapists there.
Wow.
And we specialized in an intensive outpatient program. And what was really neat is because, I mean, there were so many different styles of therapists. So you really got to learn from each other.
Yeah.
And we were all really close. I mean, I got engaged while I was there. I got married while I was there. I had my three children. I had my baby showers there. Like, I feel like I really grew up in that practice setting. It definitely was a very family kind of relationship. But then after my third child, I just knew that I needed more flexibility with my schedule. And so that's when I went up to my clinical director and I said, I'm going to have to go. And he was sad. And he said, I'm sad for me because we're not going to be the same, you know, without you, because we just really became so close. But I moved into opening up my private practice, Scottsdale Premier Counseling, and I'm almost in my third year. And it's been wonderful. I mean, I love it. Awesome. I love all my clients. I'm just so blessed to have the people I get to serve.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I think it's so cool when people go through something that makes them, you know, be on the other side of it, like where you really needed counseling and saw how beneficial it was and then got into that field. I think that's such a neat way to get into it because you get to see firsthand what it can do for people.
Oh,
and then
you
get to be like, I want to provide this for other people.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I've been in counseling multiple times since I was 16.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've been on the couch. I went back into therapy when I was in college. I went back into therapy after college. I returned several times for different areas and different things that were coming up in that season of my life. And and even as a therapist, I still get therapy. I always say human first, therapist second.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I know that you talk about a lot is, you know, shattering the stigma around mental health. Mm-hmm. And so what does that mean to you? And why do you think that there's a stigma around mental health?
Because I see it. I see it all the time. It's just, you know, there's such a culture out there. And I think it's, how do I say this? So first and foremost, everybody's going through something.
Sure.
Right? And we never know what somebody's going through, no matter how strong or how put together or how fit they may look. Everyone's going through something. And we forget that. And we tend to think when we're going through something, I know I've had friends or I've seen it with clients or maybe even myself, like you just power through. You think, okay, I just power through this. And the powering through can serve to some extent, possibly, but the deeper work needs to happen. We have to look at those negative core beliefs that we have about ourselves and how they show up unexpectedly and spill over. There's many times people come in and they come in for one issue, but it ends up being something completely, totally different than what brought them in. Because that's where their woundedness is.
Sure.
And I see it a lot, you know, even with men, you know, there's such a stigma, I think, for men to think that they're weak if they seek out help. And I mean, it could be the farthest thing from the truth because it takes so much courage to talk about, you know, the things that have happened to you that are, you know, not your fault. And to be able to talk with a person and open up takes a lot of vulnerability.
Yeah.
And it's not always comfortable. So I think that there's stigma that people think a big crisis has to have happened for someone to come in. And you don't have to have a crisis for you to come in to talk to somebody. It could be really anything. You could be doing well and just making sure you want to stay on track.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that would be a reason to come in.
Definitely. I love that. Sometimes when I get clients that in my nutrition coaching business that just want to make sure that they're optimizing their health or they just want to be like the best parent possible, I'm like, yes, this is like my favorite kind of client. Like, don't wait until you have an unhealthy relationship with food or you've, you know, gained weight that you don't want to carry before you seek help. Like, do it now so that you can stay on the right track. I love that because I do think that most people think something traumatic has to happen before they seek therapy.
Yeah. I mean, when I was engaged, I went back into therapy, not because we were not doing well. We were doing great. It's because I wanted to make sure we would stay on that path.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, maybe there's something else that I need to explore so that I can show up as the best version of myself to my, you know, future husband. And there was, and I'm so glad I went back in. It wasn't like I needed, you know, 20 sessions. It just was a place for me to go in and explore a couple of things that I think ultimately really served us and our marriage really well.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Thanks.
I'm going to pivot a little bit. So I did my research and I know that your dissertation, for your doctorate had some really interesting results. So can you tell me a little bit about what that was and what you found?
Yeah. So my dissertation was, on really cosmetic surgery, undergoing cosmetic surgery, and if that improves a person's body image and self-concept. So I use the self-concept scale, the Tennessee self-concept scale, and the body cathexis scale. The body cathexis scale measures a person's levels of dissatisfaction with parts of their body.
Okay.
So for women, it's typically, you know, breasts, abdomen, thighs, and buttocks. For men, it's chest, you know, stomach. Gosh, if I can remember, I think it was also height, but that wasn't something you can obviously do anything with plastic surgery. But it was also just their masculinity being something that needed, they wanted to portray with, achieving, results through cosmetic surgery. So I actually did, my testing at Lifetime Fitness. Bram Akradi, the owner of Lifetime, thought it was a great idea. So I was able to use the people there. And I had them fill out a survey. And so really what the results found in a nutshell was that cosmetic surgery did not improve a person's self-concept and body image.
That is so interesting.
It was totally interesting. And it was actually... I was taken aback, to be honest with you. I mean, I thought for sure that
that's why they're paying for it, right?
And actually my literature review, was in a sense kind of ready to support the fact that, you know, people would feel better about themselves.
Sure.
And so my chair, my co-chairs, my two co-chairs and myself, we went back into the research. We're like, okay, what happened? Like, why aren't they satisfied? And we really don't know for sure what the why is, but we hypothesized that those that had, undergone cosmetic surgery might have had a worse self-concept than those who did not, pursue cosmetic surgery.
Sure.
So, that could have played a role.
Sure.
Since there was no pre-test of self-concept and body cathexis. And also, several of the people stated that they were like overall unhappy with the surgeon, herself, that they worked with.
So, and, like,
the experience of the cosmetic surgery might have played a role too. But I mean, it was great. I mean, I was glad to hear it, to be honest with you, that, you know, a cosmetic surgery isn't the answer for having a negative body image.
Yeah. That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There's two things there that I want to dive into. The first is, I speak with a lot of people in the health and fitness space around the concept of, I'm trying to think about the best way to put this, where you maybe don't have the best self-esteem and you believe that by losing X amount of weight or doing X, you know, thing or reaching X goal, that that will dramatically improve your self-esteem, that you won't have the self-esteem issues or insecurities that you have now. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I can relate to that. I mean, not only from a professional standpoint, from a personal standpoint, I think that's the message that we're sold.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what I always tell people. You've got to recognize this is a multi-billion dollar
huge
industry that's selling you a message that the way you look is not good enough. And if you buy this or do that, follow me here, then you will have the life you've always wanted. But I work with people that suffer from anorexia nervosa, and I'm telling you right now, they are some of the most miserable people on this planet.
Yeah.
Anorexia is not an antidote to happiness.
Sure.
It's not. In fact, what it does is it perpetuates our obsessiveness and our compulsive behavior to continue to try to lose weight.
Yeah.
So diet culture, which is what the term is exactly what's marketed, because we celebrate, we put people on a pedestal if they look a certain way, shape, or size. And it's not reality. Sure. They're doing drastic things to get there. They're just not talking about it. They're not telling you. They're not telling you the behind the scenes.
Right.
And it's sad. It's really sad. And I see so many men and women really hate their bodies because they don't look like what they think they should look like compared to what they see on social media.
Yeah.
So the deeper work, when you're healing your body image, is not from the outside in, it's from the inside out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a good point about it being such a huge industry, because when you think about it, nobody profits when you love yourself and feel good in your own skin, right? You don't go buy all of these things because you're content. So it's like, there's no money to be made in that. So why would they perpetuate that message? That's such an interesting point. So what does happen when you're healing from the inside out as you're reaching a goal? When somebody does lose weight and they feel so much better at the end, what is that internal process that's happening?
Well, I think they feel, you know, a validation, like they finally will be accepted.
Sure.
Whether it's by dad, like dad finally is noticing me. Dad's not picking on me anymore when I walk in the door. When I come home and visit my parents, the first thing my mom may not say to me if I lose weight is, honey, wow, you've put some weight on.
Yeah.
Or you better not eat that. So it may even be something that's internal within the family system that if they lose the weight, they're going to get mom and dad off their backs.
Yeah.
And they'll actually feel like they belong. It could be something within the culture, you know, being treated with respect, being treated as like a citizen, like just humanity. I see so many people that are in larger shape sizes or bodies and they're not treated well.
Yeah.
I mean, they're discriminated, anything from little things all the way to big things. I hate the bigotry. I hate the stigma. It's not right. I see it. Such pain and woundedness for people that are in larger shapes or size. And that doesn't make a person superior because they're in a smaller body. So many things could have led to a person being a smaller body that are not healthy. They could have lost someone that's very important in their life and they haven't had an appetite and that's why they've lost weight. They could be going through a divorce. They could have cancer. They could have issues with their children. I mean, they're not eating not because purposely, but they're just forgetting to eat.
Sure.
And because their cortisol levels are higher because they're going through a very stressful situation. So I think as a culture, we're programmed to comment on a person's body shape and size. Like, wow, you look great. Oh my gosh. Like, have you lost weight?
Yeah.
And it may be innocuous, but we don't know what that person's going through.
Right.
So even for myself, one of the things I really try to do is not comment on a person's look. And it's hard. Like, I'm so programmed to
totally.
Do it. Right. And I mean, sometimes I want to be like, damn girl, you look good. You know, and I'll give the shout outs when I need to, but I also don't want it to be something like, you know, you're more than, you know,
right.
More than how you look. Like I always tell my clients, like, no matter if they're a model sitting in front of me, I'm like, the least interesting thing about you is that you're pretty.
That's so good.
Like, yes, you're pretty, but what else is about you?
Right.
Who are you in
That's
there?
The least, yeah, the least yes. important of your worth. That
yeah.
is so good.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny you say that. I was just in Dallas last weekend with a few of my girlfriends, mm-hmm. and this woman came up to me at the restaurant, and she said, I had like a sleeveless top on, and she pointed at my arms, and she said, why do you have arms like that? What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
And I know she meant it well.
Yeah.
But it was... I looked at my girlfriends after she left and I was like, it's funny that you would never go up to somebody and be like, you're so thin. Why mm-hmm. don't you work out? Or mm-hmm. you never go up to somebody overweight and be like, why are your arms so like mm-hmm. not toned? Like you would mm-hmm. never say that. And so I think it's funny how depending on the body that we have, it also becomes more or less acceptable to comment,
yeah.
which why would that be the case? Right.
Yeah. I mean, it really, you know, commenting on people's bodies to me goes back into objectification.
Yeah.
You know, because then it's less about who we are and more about the way that we look and we just objectify ourselves. And there's objectification and there's self-objectification. And so it's a long spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always tell people, you have to decide where you're comfortable in the spectrum and also how you're comfortable being talked to.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, we get like you unsolicited feedback about right. the way that we look. And, you know, I see it a lot of times with pregnant women.
Yeah.
You know, people comment all the time on their shape and size. I mean, I have people say things to me all the time. I mean, good and not so good.
Sure.
Like even after I had my child, I mean, I was standing in the checkout line. I'll never forget it. And my baby is literally in the car seat next to me. And the guy ringing me up says to me, when are you due?
Mm.
And I was like, she's right there.
Right here.
I'm like, looking at him, I'm like, are you for real right now?
Oh my God.
And I've had some really negative things said to me. And I'm so glad, honestly, that I'm in a place in my life where it doesn't like hurt. I mean, sure, it's like it stinks, but it doesn't like wound me.
Yeah.
And my heart breaks for those people that are not in that place, because it can be really traumatic and really harmful to the person. So, you know, I just try to go with this rule of thumb of don't comment on what they look like. Like, get to know them, ask them how they are. Like, what did you do today? What are you working on? What's something fun that's exciting in your life? Like, you know, like connect and make that human experience rather than focusing on what they look like.
Absolutely. I love that. Mm-hmm. One of the things you said earlier was self-concept. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and how that is different than self-esteem?
Yeah. So self-concept is how I see who I am. So it's like the who, mm-hmm. like who am I? And then self-esteem is based on like what I do. So it's more external validation. Sure. So how well did I perform on that exam? How much money am I making? What kind of car I'm driving? What does my body look like?
Yeah.
So self-esteem is where a lot of us struggle, because we all, most of us are doers, mm-hmm. right? And let's say we didn't do well in an area of our life, then we feel bad about ourselves.
Yeah.
So it can really cause disruption in a person's worth and their self-concept. So they can lead to anxiety, it can lead to depression, it can lead to isolation. And so it's really important that we don't base our worth on our self-esteem.
Yeah.
That we base our worth in who I am. So I'm going to be okay regardless of how much money I bring in this month. I'm going to be okay regardless of what kind of car I'm driving. I'm going to be okay regardless if I'm in a relationship or not.
Sure.
Right? Because that's also part of the self-esteem is our, you know, romantic relationships. External,
yeah. Mm-hmm. What kind of things make up self-concept?
So there's a lot. I'd like to think of it as like a stew.
Sure.
So there's all these different ingredients that come into it. So our morals, our values, our relationships, our competency, our academia, our careers, our family, body image is a huge piece. So when I work with a person's body image, that's exactly what I do. I'll get like a big, you know, big poster board of paper and just start to unpack their self-concept stew and see what ingredients they've been pouring in. And that's typically, cool. You know, we want them to have equal amounts of the ingredients, but typically there'll be a lot more of body image. Sure. And so therefore, if that's the main ingredient in your recipe of self-concept, then that's what you're going to be focusing on.
Yeah. How interesting. Well, and you can think about it both ways, in the sense that when your body image isn't where you want it to be, that takes up so much of your mm-hmm. self-concept. But then when maybe things like, you know, how proud you feel at work or, mm-hmm. or whatever it is goes really well, that doesn't have as much weight because you're not giving it as much power as exactly. you're, you know, and so then it's not moving you forward as much as it could. So yeah. I think both positive and negative, it makes a big difference.
You're exactly right.
That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Something I want to ask you about that kind of lends itself to that is the idea of self-limiting beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this comes up a lot with my clients, and mm-hmm. I hear often, and I love my clients, but I hear often phrases such as, this is the way I am, or this is just how I am, or right, like these, I can't change or grow, this is the person that I am. And you could see that sometimes being a really positive thing, but sometimes it holds people back. And so how do you coach people through that, or what is kind of your take on getting past some of these things that may be holding you back?
How do I say this in a way that's going to be carefronting? When I have heard that expression, to me, it's a sign of immaturity. You know, that's who I am. You know, mm-hmm. well, actually, no, because that's not growth.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a standstill.
Right.
You know, we're continually evolving. And if you are resisting that, then to me, it's a sign of what message did you get in childhood that says you're good at being good? Because there's great and then there's good.
Yeah.
So what's wrong? What's stopping you from going up to great?
Yeah.
What's a limiting belief that's holding you back from the greatness that you're happy in the good?
Right.
And you can be in the good. But then even in their good, you're saying, well, that's all I am. Like, I'm not even going to move in my range of goodness.
Yeah.
Right. So it's really like this kind of immature way of thinking. Like, children would think that way. Like, well, that's just who I am, because someone labeled them and told them that that's who they are.
Right.
That's not an internal belief. They heard that message somehow, some way.
Yeah. And then internalize it as their truth.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Do you think a lot of self-limiting beliefs, issues that people are working through, subconscious struggles, come down to childhood?
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think on social media and in a lot of the maybe non-therapeutic world, or maybe somewhat in the therapeutic world, we talk about limiting beliefs and how I look at it. And like on the surface, there are the limiting beliefs, but like underneath the roots of that weed of limiting beliefs is your negative core beliefs.
Mm.
So your negative core belief, you get a visceral reaction. So when I'm talking about someone's woundedness and their trauma and we're working through it, I know I've hit a negative core belief when the body shifts in the energy.
Interesting.
They tighten their breath. Their color might change. They're shaking. Tears might be coming down. There's something that happens viscerally. And then I'm like, okay, that's, we got to pause there.
Yeah.
What's that about? Let's talk about that. And we just kind of settle into it. Right? Because a lot of times we've been living our life without settling in and really unpacking the woundedness, the sobbing, hurting part of us that we haven't been able to talk about.
Yeah.
And so, but on the surface, I can talk about the limiting beliefs because it's in a more kind of acceptable way.
Sure.
So, oh my gosh, I'm so nervous about putting this out there because what if somebody doesn't like it? I mean, that's easy to say.
Sure.
Right? Perfectionism, feeling overwhelmed, procrastination, you know, imposter syndrome.
Right.
Those are all limiting beliefs, but underneath that,
yeah,
is the negative core belief.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good. Can you give me an example of what a negative core belief might be that goes along with a self-limiting belief?
The two most researched ones that came out through Aaron Beck's work of cognitive behavioral therapy, I'm a failure and I'm unlovable.
Mm.
So those are the two. I would say with Brené Brown's work is, which is all about shame.
Yeah.
Is that I'm not blank enough.
Sure.
So for women, it's around our body image. That's the number one way that we are shamed by culture and with ourselves.
Yeah.
And also motherhood, because you don't even have to be a mom to be shamed about motherhood. Because the question is, when are you gonna have a baby?
Right.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. And if you are a mom, I mean, you get shamed all the time. You know, oh God, I would never have done that with my child.
Yeah.
I mean, moms do it to moms. It's like, right. It's not good. And then for men, it's about being provider,
mm-hmm.
You know, financial wealth. And I always hear this with men. It's about fixing it.
Mm, yeah.
It being the woman in their life, whatever she's going through. I just want to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I try to help them have the empathy to understand, like, she doesn't need to be fixed. She needs you to sit with her and that experience and that pain that she's drowning in.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear you say that because I feel like I've said interesting so many times on this podcast.
It's okay. Right? I'm not counting.
I need a different adjective. But I think we'd be so, maybe not quick, but it would be way more socially acceptable to say, I don't feel good in this dress, or I don't feel mm-hmm. X. But you probably would never say to your friends, I feel unlovable.
Right.
Right? Like, that's the stuff that would come out in therapy yeah. that you're not sitting with.
Correct. I'm not lovable. Something's wrong with me.
Right.
Another one I hear is, it was all my fault.
Yeah.
There was this really, really cool exercise when I attended the Bliss Tribe event with Lori Harder, and we really kind of tapped into these negative core beliefs. And that was the one that I said to the women, because that was one that resonated with me. Right. So like you know, like, oh, that's my visceral experience. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't your fault. Right. So you have to be in tune with your experience of your negative core beliefs to be able to help other people be able to heal from theirs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you had a really amazing breakthrough at Lori Harder's Bliss Project.
I did.
I did. Can you talk a little bit about what that was and what it did for you?
Yeah. You know, I think as a psychologist, you know, it's sometimes it can be hard for me to sit into spaces of like that type of, those type of events, because it's like, I know this stuff, you know, like I went to school and I did this for 12 years. Like I know
how
stuff.
Humans work. Yeah. Right.
But I really, really made a conscious effort before I stepped foot into the auditorium there to not have my psychology hat on and just to be Morgan, just to show up as me and be raw and open to the experience. And I'm really, really glad I did. Because I it gave me a lens to look at myself, and really just own the places in my life that I was holding myself back. Because I, like I said, I have my negative core beliefs that show up in, into my limiting beliefs, and I cried. I mean, like I was sobbing for like 2 days straight. And I, at the end of it, I called my husband and I just gave him the biggest apology. And it wasn't like there was anything bad going on in our marriage, but I knew that I wasn't showing up in a way that I really needed to for him and for me.
Yeah.
And so at first he was like, no, no, it's okay. I'm like, don't do that. Mm-hmm. Don't excuse my behavior. You've been doing that for way too long. And I need you to know that I recognize that I can do better. And when you know better, you do better.
100%.
And so that was really just a huge eye-opening experience. And I it was great. I mean, I highly recommend that event to anybody. I hope to go back next, this coming year, if it works in the calendar, but yeah, it was awesome.
And what did that breakthrough do for your business and you personally after the fact, after you left the event?
Well, after the Powerhouse event in 2019, I had spoken with Lori at Lindsay's event, and Lori had asked me to be on her podcast, and I, of course, was so excited and basically like was like almost fell to the ground. but I think, I can't remember exactly what I asked her. Oh, it was something I said. I limited myself. I said, been like, well, I'm just this. And I wish I knew exactly what I said, but she kind of gave me a look like, oh, well, like it was just, the energy shifted. And I thought, okay, what happened? And so, I had a lot of mom guilt, and that's again, like my negative core belief, like, you know, being a mom to three children and then working, like, how do I make this happen? And I hate the word balance, 'cause I think it's just a stepsister of perfectionism. So like, how do I juggle this? Like, there's always a compromise, right? Because if I'm putting time into work, then I'm not putting time into my house and my home. Right. If I'm putting time in my home, then my work's going to suffer. So it wasn't until I was at my daughter's school and they were doing like a tribute to the moms, and it's gonna make me cry, but she, on her video, she said, I love my mom because she works so hard. And I just lost it. And I still do, because it was like, she was giving me permission.
Yeah.
Like she was giving me permission to be that working mom. Because there's just so much shame and there's so much guilt. Like you feel like you're never doing enough, and you're not. Like there's just no way you can. Like no one can do enough.
Yeah.
But it was then that I was like, okay, you know what? I'm being a good role model for her, and I'm really showing her like what hard work looks like.
Yeah.
And she's proud of me. Like that's what she loves about me. So it was such a great gift that she gave me to give myself that permission. And then ironically, Lori's theme at her Bliss Tribe was permission. And I like the permission to, you know, for really anything that you need to give yourself permission for. So I took that, and then I, like I said, I went through that whole transformation that weekend at her conference. And then I literally wrote her an email and I said, I have to take accountability because I was limiting myself. I didn't believe in myself. I didn't think I could be a person to come on your podcast and really talk because I had imposter syndrome. I thought, you know, who am I? I can't take time away from my kids. And like, I just really was completely authentic and vulnerable in this email.
Yeah.
And I didn't proofread it. I just hit send.
Good.
Like 24 hours, not even like within 24 hours, she got back to me and she's like, when I'm so excited, here's the dates that you can be featured.
Oh,
and it just happened. And amazing. It was just amazing. And I'm so glad because the moment that I returned and I was allowing myself to receive, like so many gifts came in. And it was almost to the point where like, oh my gosh, like what is happening right now? And like I mentioned earlier to you, like my friend was like, no, like you've been pushing things away. Like there, it's just been waiting for you to receive. And so I really feel like my purpose, and that kind of came together at the Bliss Tribe, was to help spread the word of mental health and to end the stigma and to help women and men stop hating their bodies. Because those two areas I'm extremely passionate about.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing that. That's amazing. Thanks. And how incredible for your daughter to grow up and see what, you know, it's like that. You can't be what you can't see. Like, right. But she knows that you can be a working mom and you can be an entrepreneur if you want. And that's just incredible.
Yeah, I know. I'm really lucky that I have like kids that are, you know, they're so used to it. They're like, you going to work? Like they just, it's like their norm.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Something you said a couple minutes ago that I want to make sure I touch on is care fronting. What is that?
Well, that was a term that was actually given to me. It wasn't something that I actually came up with. My clinical director's father, Ralph, we did co-therapy a lot of times. He was an older man in his like late 60s. And I was this young 20-something-year-old therapist. And so we were kind of like the an interesting combo. And he just basically said, like, Morgan's a care-fronting therapist. And I think for me what that means is I can be empathetic to your experience and directive.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it's not just me holding your hand. It's me holding your hand and getting you to where you need to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I kind of explain my style. I think I have a delivery that's pretty open and honest without being insulting.
Sure. And I think that's important because you can probably find people in your life that are, you can do anything and you got this, and like so encouraging, which is great.
Yeah.
And then you probably have people that are like, get your stuff together and like stop moping around. Like you probably can find both of those people in your life. So finding somebody that can be the best of both of those is probably difficult.
Yeah. And I think that that's when you're a therapist, you find your flow of how to deliver it and when to push, when to come back off, you know, based on the person and their experience and what they're going through. And I think that's really, you know, rapport, right, is the most important factor in therapy.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. How would somebody decide if therapy is right for them?
Well, I think therapy is right for everybody.
Yeah. I kind of thought you might say that.
I don't think there's anybody that would not benefit. I think it just depends on, recognizing that the greatest investment that you can make within yourself is your mental health. Because it overrides everything. It overrides how well you do in that boardroom, on that conference call, how well you do as a parent, how well you do as a partner, how well you do as a provider, everywhere.
Yeah.
So
it's really the foundation to everything.
Everything.
Else. Yeah. How do people find a counselor that is a good fit for them?
That's a great question because I've done my own therapy and I've had some really great therapists and I've had some not so great therapists.
Yeah.
And I think for me, like I mentioned, the rapport, like, does this person get me?
Yeah.
Does this person feel like, I mean, I feel like safe with this person and I can open up on my, you know, level, right? Sure. Like you don't have to go in and unpack everything, you know, the first session or two or more, you know, you can take your time.
Yeah.
It's on, in a sense, your kind of agenda, but you got to go in knowing that it's going to be uncomfortable.
Sure.
Right. It's not always pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. I think a lot of times, always on the first session, people are like, I didn't plan on crying. And I'm like, this is the like place to cry.
You know? I'm pretty sure I've said that.
Yeah. I mean, I have tissue boxes in stock, so it's very normal for me to see people cry.
Yeah.
I think people feel, again, that vulnerability, that shame, like I shouldn't cry. I shouldn't express my pain. And I try to do like, get away from that belief, because it's limited them in so many ways.
Right. I try to tell my clients when we have conversations or even my friends about counseling, you know, that it's just like if you went to the gym and like didn't love your workout, you wouldn't be like, exercise isn't for me. Like you, right? Like you wouldn't just stop and be like, never moving my body again.
Yeah.
So it's like when you go and meet a therapist and they're not a great fit for you, especially early on in your therapy journey, I think it can be I knew this wasn't for me.
Yeah.
You know, but trying to remember that every therapist can't be for you. Right.
Correct.
And so being open to trying different personalities and different experiences, I think, is so important.
And styles. And I think also, if you know, if you have a friend who really likes their therapist, you could always ask them, like, hey, can I get your therapist's name? Like, I have so many friends of mine who will reach out and be like, okay, I know you're in this world. Who should I go see?
That's awesome.
And, you know, I've even tried to refer them to my therapist, but sometimes she's booked. She's not even taking new clients anymore. So I'm like, she's full. But yeah, I mean, I think also just being able to ask people that you know that are in therapy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, depending on, do you want to work with a male or female? If finances are an area that you need to be conservative with, like, do I go to an agency versus a private practice? Do they take my insurance? You can always call on the back of your card, your health insurance card, to see who takes your insurance in your area. You can ask, maybe teachers might know people if you're a younger student. If you're in college, there's the counseling center, which, you know, is free because you're paying that tuition. And I always tell, you know, college kids, like, use your counseling center. Like, I worked at a counseling center. Like, that's one of my, you know, trainings was there. So, you know, use those services that are readily available to you.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. What kind of things can people do, like, tactically if counseling is not in their time or budget right now? What kind of things could they be doing to aid their mental health if they can't afford yet to go see a therapist?
Well, I love social media for that reason.
Yeah.
Because there are so many great people on social media right now that are licensed therapists that are putting amazing content out there. It's, I mean, for me, like, I'm saving them. Like, I'm like, okay, save.
I mean, you're one of them, but.
Thank you. But yeah, I mean, I, it's fun because I have like a couple people I went to school with, that are just killing it on social media. And it's really, it's fun to see like what they're doing too. Cause we were in the program, we were in classes together.
Yeah.
So I love social media for that. And then I also love being able to have books or podcasts to listen to get information to, you know, just to know that I'm in that zone.
Yeah.
You know, that they can start to think about things and think about their pain. But I mean, ultimately, even if it's just one or two sessions, I mean, I worked with a girl, she lived all the way in Yuma.
Wow.
And she drove from Yuma to come see me. And, you know, we just try to get as much as we could in. I'm like, okay, this is what I need you to do for the next like month.
Here's your homework.
Yeah. And so we knew it wasn't going to be something that was going to be ongoing due to obviously the distance, but her just having a place to come in and just unpack and really just let go was really which therapeutic for her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What a cool concept. My favorite therapist that I've worked with is 45 minutes from my house, like a pretty good, but it's so worth it when you have somebody you jive with, you know, and going in and saying like, I'm not going to be able to see you weekly, but, you know, what tools can I take away from this?
Right.
I think that's huge.
Yeah. And there's definitely, you know, people that can't afford to see me weekly.
Sure.
So, you know, or I don't have honestly the openness to be able to see people on a weekly basis too. And so, not openness, availability. So I'll say, okay, because we're not going to see each other for so long, here are some things you can do outside of our time, because you have to be active during this phase, because you're going to get more out of our time if you're doing these things.
Right.
So it's like working out, you 100%. Know, like with your trainer. Like you can go and you can work out with your trainer, but if you're only training once a month with your trainer, right. you're not going to get those benefits for your health, you know, unless you're doing those exercises in addition to seeing your trainer.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. What kind of advice would you give to somebody that's hesitant about starting therapy? I know we talked a little bit about breaking that stigma, but people that are unsure if it's for them or scared of the vulnerability or, you know, maybe they're not even willing to say that out loud. But what kind of advice do you give to people that are thinking about dipping their toe in seeing somebody but are a little unsure?
That's okay.
Yeah.
That it's okay. That's okay that you're unsure. It would make sense that you'd be scared. Because, you know, it's been a tough journey and you're not used to talking about these things. And so, you know, I've had people bring in a friend.
Oh, that's fun.
As long as we can sign a release that their friend can be there with them. We've done that. I've had parents come in and it hasn't even been with a minor. You know, the child could be, you know, in their young 20s and really want mom there with them. And so mom comes in too. And so, you know, sometimes just being able to call the therapist and have a little conversation on the phone can be helpful.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things, if someone calls me, I just make sure that I can address and I can help with those issues they're wanting to come in with.
Sure.
It's not just, oh, yes, let me go ahead and schedule you. It's, well, what are you wanting to focus on?
Right.
And let me make sure I'm the best fit. And, you know, for me, you know, I'm pretty saturated right now in my practice. So if it's something that's really urgent that they're wanting to be seen on a consistent basis, like I'm not the right fit for them because I have a saturated private practice right now. So they may need a higher level of care than what I'm able to provide. So
sure.
just a kind of assessing the need is another area too that you can talk about just over the phone as a phone consultation.
Yeah.
And there are some places and practices that do offer a 15-minute phone consultation.
That's awesome.
So you can kind of, like I said, get a feel for the person. But just know it's okay that you're nervous. I mean, yeah. That's a pretty normal thing. And not to think that anything's wrong with you for being nervous or not sure if it could work for you.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. When are you ever sure things are going to work for you when you've never tried them before, right?
Right.
You mentioned bringing a friend, which I think is so funny. What can people do if they have a friend or a family member that is really going through a hard time with their mental health?
You know, it's such a tough question because there's so many different ways to kind of go about this. One is just to offer that support, that compassion, letting them know that they're not alone. And I think another thing is to put the phone numbers and the resources into their phone.
I love that.
So like we have Uber,
right.
You know, but we don't think about the National Crisis Hotline.
Yeah.
Or like the name's escaping me, but the number you can text to get mental health, answer to you right away. It's like 24/7. And again, it's blank and it's not coming to my
brain.
That's
amazing.
Right now.
Well, I'll look it up and I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes.
So people can save it.
Yeah, for sure. Because, you know, you may not be there when they're in that really critical, sensitive moment in their life and you can't be there 24/7.
Right.
So giving them the tools the capable tool to have access on their phones, since typically we're always with our phones, is what I always tell people. Like I presented at a high school way far away. and none of those teenagers had any mental health resources in their phones.
Wow.
So I'm like literally in the middle of the
cool
lecture.
Suggestion.
I had them pull out their phone.
You're like, do this
and
right
I'm like,
now.
Put this number in your phone. Yeah. These are your resources. And they all did. And they all actually thanked me afterwards. And they're like, oh my gosh, my brother's struggling with drug abuse or my mom's an alcoholic or my dad left and I've been really struggling. And so they now had access to call the crisis line, the suicide hotline, to be able to talk to people. And that was one of my first jobs. I was a suicide hotline phone answer person.
Wow. Bless your heart.
Yeah. Oh. That's my first training experience.
Well, it must have.
It was intense.
It must intense. Have yeah, been rewarding or you wouldn't have kept being in this field.
Right. Yes, it's true.
That's a good way to see if this is a good fit
it
for
is.
You.
It is. Yeah, there's not maybe. It's like the Navy SEAL training for therapy.
Right. Yeah. Like you're in or you're out.
Yes, yeah, so you're either going to make it or you're not.
Right.
Yeah.
That's such a good idea because, we know about human behavior that the more obstacles that are in your way, the less likely you are to do something, right?
Exactly.
So if you need to Google the number and do all these things, you're far less likely to utilize it.
Yeah.
So by minimizing those barriers, I think that's such a great idea.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Before we finish, I'm going to dive into a few questions that I got from the audience, which is so fun because I've never done this before.
This is so fun.
I say audience like they're, sitting here or something. but I told people on Instagram that you were coming on and I asked, what kind of things do you want to know about body shame or self-love or counseling or therapy? And so I got a few really good ones. So answer however you feel fit. I know that you can't be too terribly specific, but the first one is, what are your tips when someone is struggling with comparing themselves to others?
Oh, I feel you, right? Because we all do it.
Totally.
And I've gotten so much better at this because one of the things that I realized is that comparison is the thief of joy. So whenever we compare ourselves, we always do it in a less than position.
Mm-hmm.
We never are like, oh, gosh, thank God my legs are so much better looking than hers.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's never like a one-up position.
Yeah.
So automatically, whenever you compare yourself to others, you're setting yourself up for disappointment.
Yeah.
You're setting yourself up for discouragement, for feeling not good enough. And so if you can stop it, then that's something you can do about it. So just being able to notice it and really being mindful, like, okay, this is what I'm doing. I love the idea of just naming what's actually happening for a person, like, and taking that acknowledgement, that recognition, so you can demolish the behavior. Because if you don't know and you're not being mindful of what you're doing, then you really can't do anything about it.
Right.
But once you name it, then you can stop it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's so good. I did this. Have you heard of Koru?
No.
It's like a mindfulness certification course type thing. And one of my girlfriends and I went through their course. It was free at ASU through the ASU Center for Mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 4 weeks. And we learned all of these amazing tools and tips about mindfulness and meditation. One of the things they had us do was like a labeling of thoughts.
Yeah.
And they took us through a meditation where we had to label the thoughts that we were having as certain things. And that was so profound for me because I felt like once I gave them a name, then when they come up again, I'm like, I know who I've seen you before.
Exactly.
Like we've been here. We don't need to talk again. We've done this. And it was so crazy interesting because it seems so simple.
Yes. No, I completely agree with you. Tiffany Rowe, she's a therapist out of Salt Lake City or Utah in general. Talks about like, hey, like when anxiety comes up, be like, hey, anxiety.
Yeah.
All right. So you're back. What's going on?
Right.
You know, like what do I need to pay attention to? Because emotions are information.
Yes.
You know, oftentimes we think that emotions are something so negative to feel and they're not. It's information for us. So if I feel anxious, I'm like, okay, thank you, body. Thank you for telling me something's off and I need to pay attention to my environment. I need to pay attention to my friendships, like whatever is causing me that stress of the anxiety. So that's also with comparison. So if you're comparing yourself to others, okay, hey, comparison, the thief of joy, what's going on? Why am I trying to, you know, put myself down? What's really going on around this?
Yeah.
Another thing too, for those of my clients I've assigned, like, okay, if you do compare yourself, then you have to follow it up with a positive affirmation about yourself.
I like that.
So then you've got to find something to say positively about you.
That's good. I like that a lot. I'm a big fan of affirmations.
Me too.
Those are good. What are daily strategies that we can use to work on self-love and self-acceptance?
Well, I love gratitude.
Yeah.
You know, when there's a saying that I came up with after the Bliss event was when gravity pulls me down, gratitude lifts me up.
That's good.
I know.
You should trademark that.
So gratitude is really helpful when we're feeling hopeless. Because when we are hopeless, we tend to get into this reactive mode instead of being in a place where we are trying to respond. And responding means I'm solution focused versus reactivity means I'm focusing on what didn't work and the negativity and just really get into that spiral of shame. So I love being able to start, you know, a morning ritual. I call it morning intention, nighttime reflection.
Mm.
So morning intention would be, you know, whether it's meditating, journaling, gratitude, prayer, and just setting aside those 10 to 15 minutes, just set your day up with the intention of how I want to spend my day. So if you're wanting to manifest self-love, then it's about getting out of that inner critic.
Yeah.
So I did a workshop on mastering self-love and, you know, the three concepts that I reviewed was notice the inner critic, get curious and become compassionate.
Mm.
So those are the three steps that I taught, the attendees, of what to do. And you can really kind of start to manifest that in the morning. So, you know, notice the inner critic. So what thoughts typically come into my mind, you know, get curious, you know, instead of thinking to yourself, why is this happening to me? Ask yourself, what is this trying to teach me?
Yeah.
And then become compassionate. You know, how would I talk to a friend?
Right.
Right. Cause we're so much kinder to the people around us than we are to ourselves. And so when we are trying to master our self-love, like think about like, how would I talk to my friend right now in this situation if she was going through this?
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. I think gratitude is huge. And so I have my clients work on it all the time.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those things kind of like breath work that seems so simple that you're like, that can't be it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like eating well and drinking water can't be what makes you lose weight because that's too simple.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where people are like, I'm already grateful. Like I'm healthy. I'm happy. Right. But once you get really intentional with what are you really grateful for on a daily basis? I just think the power is incredible.
I agree.
And you have nothing to lose by trying it, which
I
feel like I say that about so many things, but it's so true. There's so many things you can do that are free and available to you right now.
Yes.
That I think makes such a big difference that people think that's too simple to work.
Right.
And it's like, well, then prove it.
Yeah.
Right? Like try it. And
I love that reverse psychology.
Yeah. See if it's so simple that it can work.
That's good. That's real good.
What are your thoughts on children going for individual counseling? And the follow-up to that question was, is that better for a psychologist or a therapist? Which, as the third part of that question, what's the difference?
Okay, so a couple things. So yes, I think children going to therapy can be a very positive and helpful experience. So when a minor, which is under the age of 18, attends therapy, their parent needs to be, both parents need to sign off.
Okay.
Biological parents. So in the state of Arizona, for me, I like to have both parents available in the first initial session with the child.
Sure.
They can stay in the room the entire time, or they can, we can split it up and do, you know, hey, we're going to come in with Joey. And then after 30 minutes, we're going to leave Joey in here for you guys to be able to start talking about things, because kids can show up differently when their parents are in the room versus out of the room.
Yeah.
It's kind of quite amazing. And so, yeah, you know, there's lots of therapists out there, child psychologists that can help with, children, and there's different modalities. Like when I received counseling when I was a minor, you know, it wasn't just talk therapy. There's play therapy, there's music therapy, art therapy. So, you know, child psychologists can get really creative. I don't specialize in the treatment of, working with children. Because primarily it's the adults that I need to work with.
Sure.
but I do see teenagers, and I do work with college age because I love that population.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what is the difference, if there is one, between a child psychologist and a child like therapist or counselor?
So it depends on your degree.
Oh, okay.
Your licensure. So in this, there's so a licensed professional counselor is when you're licensed in the state with the board of Arizona Board of Behavioral Health Examiners.
Okay.
So you have a background in counseling. When you're licensed as a psychologist, you are licensed through their Arizona Psychological Association. I'm just speaking for people that are here in state.
Sure.
Because each state has their own licensing boards.
Okay.
So I'm only licensed in Arizona, meaning if a person was in Utah, I could not provide them therapy in Utah.
Sure.
There's all these different things now with online therapy.
Yeah.
I'm honestly not well-versed to know the answers to those questions. There's a lot of great online therapists. I can't speak on it because,
sure,
I don't know about it. But that's another great resource for people too.
Yeah.
Like for me, I got my master's in counseling, and then I got my doctorate in clinical psychology. So it's just different education and training, because counseling and psychology can be a lot different. So in my clinical, training, I did a lot of like assessments and testing, and statistics, and it's just a whole nother bag of stuff.
Yeah.
So, there's great, great counselors that are licensed at the counseling level. And there are great psychologists that are licensed at the clinical psychology level. I think it just depends, again, on the rapport,
yeah,
and what you feel, who you feel connected to.
Absolutely. That's super helpful. And the last question is, what is your advice on dealing with emotional triggers?
Get a therapist.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, emotional triggers can really be just like really destructive and disturbing, especially if it's really tapping into a traumatic event, mm-hmm, that can leave you feeling disassociated, having a panic attack, can create agoraphobia where you don't want to go outside your house.
Yeah.
It can create, you know, a major depressive episode. So if you're really getting triggered on a visceral level, that's much deeper than, you know, just, okay, calm down and breathe. Then yeah, you really need to seek some mental health services, and your body's, again, trying to tell you something.
Yeah.
You know, your body's there to let you know, hey, this is not okay.
Right.
And you need to look at this. You need to have a safe place to go talk about it. So I would definitely say if you're experiencing triggers, which can be a symptom, I'm using the word can,
sure,
it doesn't mean it is, but could be a symptom of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Sure.
So there was an event and your body is recalling it, and it's time to process it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's so powerful that we talk about your body trying to tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about that a lot in nutrition when it comes to cravings or,
yeah,
hunger, right?
Yeah.
But I think on a much deeper level, I was just listening to a podcast the other day and I don't remember which one it was, but it was talking about how pain isn't always a bad thing, that,
mm-hmm,
physical pain means your body is experiencing something.
Yeah.
And it was a cool just kind of flip on pain isn't always like, oh, stop the pain.
Right.
Like maybe it's your body saying some kind of feedback. And it, isn't it amazing how our body gives us feedback, and sometimes we try and just suppress it and ignore it and chalk it up to being emotional, or chalk it up to stress, or, you know, but
or ignore it, like flat out ignore it.
Right. And it's doing it for a reason. Mm-hmm. And like you said, getting really curious, I think is a cool way to go about that.
And that whole concept to me goes back to body trust.
Yeah.
And I see it a lot with my, you know, eating disordered or disordered eating or emotional eating clients or people struggling with body image, because maybe they've been hungry and instead of eating, they just drank water.
Right.
Or maybe they've been full and instead of stopping, they continue to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the pendulum swings both ways. And so when my body's trying to say, hey, I'm good, or hey, I'm hungry, and I'm denying, or I'm ignoring, or I'm saying, no, this is what you're going to get, I'm rupturing the trust.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you think about trust with our partners or our friends that we have in our life. Like, we would, if our friend called us and said, hey, I really need you, you wouldn't not answer it, or you wouldn't ignore it, right? And that's the same thing that you're doing to your body. Your body's saying, hey, I really need you to do X, Y, Z. And you're like, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't do that to your friend.
No.
Because you wouldn't want to break their trust.
Right.
So it's about reestablishing the trust with our bodies instead of saying, I can't trust my body.
Yeah.
Because maybe something happened where, you know, you were told you couldn't trust your body, or you've been fed the diet culture that says, don't trust your body, you know?
That's so, so good.
Mm-hmm.
I know back in June, you released, I think it was June, the Bye Bye Body Blame course.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about who that's for, what it does, so that people can look into it if they're interested?
Well, one of my goals is to make mental health more accessible. And that's kind of what I mean with social media. Like, there's a lot of great accessible things out there. And online courses was one of the ways that I thought, okay, well, I can put together this content, create a workbook. And just like if you were going to go to a class on, I don't know, mindfulness, or a class on abnormal psychology, if you were a student, like, you would go and you would sit in and you would get like a sense, like a webinar, right? So that's how I created my online course to be, is Bye Bye Body Blame. You deserve to love your body without having to lose weight, because I wanted people to be able to be in a space where they didn't have to be a certain size or certain shape to feel like they've made it, right? And to be in that place where our bodies are always changing, and it's not something that's ever going to be like one number, right? So the Bye Bye Body Blame course goes through the normalization and the definition and like the understanding of body image and how it becomes ruptured, and the areas of our life that can suffer when it does become ruptured, and the research that's out there that says, like, hey, like, when this happens, we know through research that your mindset is going to show up in this way.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest studies that was ever done on body image and starvation and restriction is the Minnesota Starvation Experiment, which is, I go through that whole study so you can use the results and you can see how we're so much like the subjects in that study back in 1944. Because when we get into a place where we're starving, we stop living.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we don't go do the things that we're meant to do. And one of the things I always say is that when I was a smaller shape or size, I don't ever wish for that body back. I wish for that time back.
Mm.
Because I didn't take those trips. I didn't go to that party. I didn't go out to dinner. In fact, I was scared to go out to dinner.
Yeah.
God forbid, like, I might eat something that wasn't on my list, or I would eat too much. Like, I didn't trust myself to be able to handle those things. So the Bye Bye Body Blame course goes through that, and then goes through four core steps that a person needs to master, which really comes through all of my research that I've learned. And I just was like, okay, how can I take all this and put it into four steps that people can really master? And that's what I did. And so it goes through those four steps and it teaches you, and then you have the workbook to work through it, which has journal prompting, meditation exercises, mindfulness, tons and tons of supplemental, research and things that you can do and listen to help you aid yourself through the Bye Bye Body Blame course.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And thank you for doing that work. Thanks. Because I just think, I mean, obviously with my nutrition coaching business, I know that it's so needed, but I know that on a society level, and being a 20-something female, I know that it's so needed.
Yeah.
And I looked at your course website. It's super affordable for, especially for people that can't afford counseling, or don't have a ton of money to spend on their own mental health. I mean, it's just super accessible. And I think the world absolutely needs more of that. Thank you so much. That was so much work to put that all together.
It was a lot of work. And this was like, I mean, it was, again, limiting belief. Like, you know, the first time I had done it, I mean, I like had it all scripted. I had my makeup done. I had a spray tan, like I had lighting. And then like I watched it and I showed my husband. I'm like, what do you think? And he's like, I wouldn't buy it. And I was like, what? Why? He's like, because it doesn't look like you. He's like, it's not authentic. He's like, I don't know. And so I walked away from it because I was like, you know what? I'm trying too hard. I'm trying to make it too perfect.
Yeah.
And I wasn't relatable. And so I didn't do anything like that. I mean, I literally was probably sweating because it was so hot out and I'm a sweater. And I, you know, just did my own makeup. I don't think I even washed my hair.
Yeah.
And I just talked. I didn't have a script. I just talked from my heart and from my education and from my knowledge and put it all out there. And done is better than perfect.
Yep.
And I didn't make it expensive on purpose. I actually got some negative feedback that I should have made it more expensive.
I'm sure it's worth, you know, 10x.
Yeah.
But your goal is to make it accessible.
Exactly. Yeah. That, like, thank you so much, because that was my purpose. My purpose was not to profit off of this. This is not a moneymaker for me. This is a way for me to serve the greater community and make, like, if I was that girl, I thought about myself, like when I was in college and I was struggling with my body image, I would have needed something like this. And there's no way I could have afforded something super expensive, like you said. And that's who it was for. Like those people that are just, I need something. And, you know, and so I'm so glad I did it the way that I did. And I've gotten great, great feedback from those people that have taken it. So I'm excited to offer it to all of your listeners. And I will provide you an additional discount code for any of your listeners. So you can extra savings on it. So
I'll put that in the show notes so people can access it. I just think that is so amazing. And as my ask to the listeners, before you buy the next ebook on nutrition or training or one of these more external things, like, do the mental work, because it is just, like you said, the foundation of everything. And so I love it.
Thanks.
Where can people follow you and keep up with you and all the awesome things you're doing?
So I'm on Instagram, Dr. Morgan Francis, and I'm pretty active on there. I've gotten better.
Yeah, you're doing awesome.
Thanks to the encouragement of Presley. my website is www.scottsdalepremiercounseling.com. That's where my course is hosted. And I'm just here in Scottsdale, Arizona. I come to events. I speak at events. It's been fun because, like, even if it's an event for, like, educational purposes, like, I've had people come on. They're like, oh, my God, I saw you on Instagram or I follow you. So I love it. So if I'm there and you're listening to this podcast, come up and say hi to me, because I love meeting people and just connecting.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here and your time and sharing your heart and your passion with the world. It is just so needed.
Oh, thank you. And you are just such a gem and such a light in this world. I'm just really grateful for all the wisdom that I get from you and just being able to be in this space with you. So thank you so much.
Thank you. That is so sweet of you.
Yeah, it's true.
Before you take off, just a few quick things. First, thank you so much for listening this entire episode. Creating this podcast brings me so much joy, and I just have the most sincere appreciation for you listening, supporting the show, and hopefully getting something out of it. Don't forget that any resources or tools mentioned in this episode are conveniently linked for you in the show notes, and you can find those in your podcast app or at heypresleycreative.com/podcast. Please share this episode with a friend and then screenshot you listening and post it on your social media or your Instagram story and tag me at @heypresley so I can see that you're listening and thank you personally. And if you really want to spread the love and you're listening on your iPhone, please take just a couple moments, leave a review in your podcast app. That gives us so much fire to continue working on this and lets me know what you're liking and what you want more of. Lastly, if you haven't already, don't forget to hit subscribe so that each and every time I post a new show, your phone will give you a sweet little reminder to listen in. If you have questions for me or suggestions for the show, find me on Instagram at @heypresley or shoot an email to podcast@heypresley.com. This episode is brought to you by Hey Presley Nutrition, the sustainable and practical approach to reaching your goals. My nutrition coaching company was founded on the basis of empowering you to be successful long-term through accountability, real-life strategies, teaching, and a holistic approach. It's month-to-month, it's entirely personalized, you work directly one-on-one with a coach, and there's no templates or meal plans or cookie-cutter protocols, just what works for you. Pop over to heypresleynutrition.com to see some of the amazing results that clients have achieved and to schedule a free phone consultation with a coach to see if it's a good fit for you.
exclusive to listeners of this show, enter promo code PODCAST, all one word, when you sign up for a sweet discount on your first month. Thank you, make it a wonderful day, and I'll catch you on the next episode.